All the great teams have a system. The system was the disguise. Because I never wanted you to know exactly what I was doing.
Rick Bucher.
It makes me think of Rick Carlisle and what he's done. Because I remember watching him with Jermaine O'Neal. He'd run all this misdirection. And then you'd end up with Jermaine O'Neal with the ball on the right block.
This is the B.J. Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show. Starring B.J. and Bucher.
Welcome to the latest edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle. I am Rick Bucher. He's BJ Armstrong. And I say this is the latest episode, but it's really a new episode because we have brought on board a new producer, Shane Freeman, who has listened to the podcast. And BJ, he has said he has found it wanting.
Shane is in the house.
So he's given us new instructions on how to make this more entertaining. But ultimately, you're going to notice that the format of this is going to be a little bit different. The reason that it's different is because we want to serve you, the fans, and we want to hit as many topics as we can and provide as much information as we can along with the usual entertainment that you got. So we are sort of going to work on a four quarters type of format, much like a game. And the first quarter is hitting some of the hot topics of the day. And this is very good with BJ being an agent and a former player. We touched upon it a little bit, but what happens if the NBA and the Players Association cannot agree, BJ, on a deal by December 15th? What happens then?
Wow, this is not only four quarters. This is four quarters of madness, I see. We're getting right into it. Well, what happens as they've been doing since the beginning, they'll continue to negotiate until a deal can be hammered out. I don't know specifically. You have to be specific. What are you asking here?
So here's my question when it comes to this topic. We hear Adam Silver saying we're having conversations. They're going really well. I'm really confident that we're going to get a deal done before December 15th.
Great. Are we having a great sense and spirit of cooperation amongst everyone?
Yes, and everyone's communicating
and everyone's holding hands. Is that what we're doing right now?
That's what's being said. And I can't help but feel that this is Groundhog's Day. I've heard this before and it's the setup to, well, we thought we were having great conversation. I mean, I really thought that they were on board with where we wanted to go, but obviously the players have some issues with what our idea is. And ultimately, I just see it as this, whatever is being said by the owners. And I have, in these previous conversations, heard this same line of dialogue where it's, we're going along. I can't believe it's going to be this easy. And I believe it's going to be contentious.
Well, I've been through these quite a few times now over the years as a player, as an executive, now as an agent. Look, until one side disagrees with the other in some capacity, right? I'm not going to give you everything you want. Then and only then will these negotiations begin to really take place and begin to start a real negotiation. A negotiation is not a negotiation until the other side can say no. And right now, the owners want the players to give them everything they want.
Yeah.
And until the players actually say no, nothing's happened. So great rhetoric. I think the NBA, and like most smart businesses, they get in front of the story. So they're getting in front of the story now, writing their narrative, and then they'll be able to write, well, what happened? It seems like things were going so well. So I think it's a great negotiating tactic, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we've seen this play before. One of the other topics we wanted to hit, and we'll hit it very quickly. LeBron James used Twitter to tell the NBA that they need to fix their Game Pass. I think it's Game Pass. But their app that provides scores and statistics. And I can deal with this, but I don't even need your help on this, BJ. He's using the wrong app, all right? Use the Bleacher Report app and you're not going to have any problems, okay? They don't need to fix it. You need to fix your phone and put the right app on
there. You tell them, Bucher.
Thank you. So let's go to the real question now, which is, and I found this interesting, and considering he's a client of the Wasserman Media Group for whom you work, Russell Westbrook, after a couple of games in Europe, is saying that European offenses are 10 times better than the ones in the NBA.
Wow.
And now, if you read his comments in full, I believe I understood what he was getting at and the reason that he said what he said. It wasn't necessarily a diss to me, it was almost an explanation for what happened to the Thunder when they were over there. But I'll ask you, why do you think he made the point of that offenses are 10 times better, European offenses are 10 times better than in the NBA? And do you agree with him?
Well, I think what he was saying, as I had an opportunity to read one story on the full article, I think what he was saying is that here in the States, in the NBA in particular, the defense is so sophisticated. And if you run your offense versus a set defense, it's really, really hard to score. And I think any player who's played in the NBA understands that concept. There in Europe, as I watch a lot of European basketball, you know, their defense isn't nearly as sophisticated as the defense here in the NBA. So I think there, you know, if I when I first read the article, I was like, I wish I could have gave this to the old Detroit Pistons, the bad boys, so I could just run a free-flowing offense. Because, you know, I had referees telling me, BJ, don't run in the lane. Bill Laimbeer is feeling a little nasty today. Rick Mahorny, these guys are hitting you. So I just think it's a different style and philosophy of the defense, more so than the offense. But I agree, they run a lot more sets there in Europe. I think they run a lot more offense, five against five. Where here, you're trying to get an advantage, play four against three, three against two, two against one. And I think that's the big difference that I think he picked up on playing over there in Europe for a couple games.
Well, and here's the other part. They gave up 142 points in their first game. So it was like, I need to explain why we were so bad. Well, it was because they're really good. They're 10 times better than what we've seen. They made the adjustment. Here's the other part. I look at it like the offenses that are run, Pete Carroll at Princeton or whatever. When you have lesser individual talent, you have to rely on your system and you have to play more of a team concept and you have to be more sophisticated that way. Now, when you marry talent with execution, that's when you get really good. But it's really easy when guys can individually beat somebody, your offenses are not by nature not going to be as complex.
And to add to that, I think defensively here in the NBA, your defense tries to create offense. Where there, you don't see that. When you watch a game there, you don't see as much defense creating offense like you do here. And especially in the playoffs, if you can get an uncontested shot, that's a good offensive possession in any playoff type of situation. But I do agree they run a lot more plays. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but certainly I don't think it would work in the NBA.
Okay, we're on to the second quarter, and we're looking forward. I don't know how much importance to place on preseason results. But that said, is there a rookie in particular that has stood out to you where you say what he's doing right now is going to translate to the regular season?
Well, this is very tough. I mean, especially now that the veterans are here and now you're putting in your offense and your defensive schemes, you're trying to find who's healthy, trying to put in your rotation. But I'm going to stick to the rookie. If there's like two or three rookies that have really, you know, stood out to me, is Chris Dunn has been I thought he was sensational. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes.
Now, you're talking about summer league?
I'm talking about what you've seen so far. Okay. I haven't seen all the rookies, but the little that I have seen of Chris Dunn, I think he is going to be a player that's going to make an impact in their rotation this year.
How so? How?
I think defensively, he's ready.
Okay.
His body is ready. He's ready to take on the level of competition from a physical standpoint right now.
Mm-hmm. I was walking my dog on the beach in San Francisco yesterday, and I ran into a couple Warriors fans, and they were asking me this exact same question about rookies that I thought were going to perform. And I made the point that as a rookie, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this, that we look at guys who are offensive weapons, and I say that's all well and good, but depending on the team that you're coming into, you're not going to get all those shots. So as a rookie, your ability to get on the floor and get meaningful minutes is going to depend on how well you defend or how well you can play without the ball. Am I onto something there?
Yeah, I do. And you have to be able to play with the ball. And you know, transitioning that, I think there's another player I think is going to get a lot of minutes, especially because he brings a skill set to the game. And that's Buddy Hield. I think Buddy,
yeah.
I expect Anthony Davis to get double teamed. I anticipate that he's going to be the focal point of every defense. I think there's going to be a lot of open shots. I think he's going to get minutes. I think he is mature enough to be ready to play. And I think he's going to get an opportunity there in New Orleans if he continues to shoot the ball or shoot it respectable, especially being young and his first time around in the league.
I'm going to give you a couple of names, just guys that stood out. Marquese Chriss with the Suns. Now, it's a young team and played well against the Blazers, 16 points, 8 rebounds. But he is a guy who, while it's scoring and his offense impressed me as much as his shot blocking and his springiness, he is a guy I think that can play kind of off the ball and be a factor. And he just looked so explosive at both ends. And that's a young team that's going to let him play. And the other guy is Patrick McCaw, who's very young. He's not going to get run with the Warriors. You're not going to see him play a whole lot. But I think the Warriors may have found another player who, down the line, whether it's this year or it's next year, is a keeper and is going to impact them.
Yeah, I agree. I think the kid Chris is going to get minutes. They have a lot of young players. They have a lot of young kids here that's going to come out. So I don't know how much he'll play immediately with the kid Dragon Bender, you know, yep, also in the fold. You know, you can only play so many minutes. But I anticipate that this is a team that needs to win or at least try to win. So maybe they play one or two of their guys. There's another kid I think now, especially with Ben Simmons going on, Denzel Valentine. I think he's going to find his way into the rotation there with Chicago. And I'm really interested to see what the Chicago Bulls team is going to do now that they have Butler and Rondo and Wade. I think somehow, some way, I think this kid Valentine is going to find his way. I know Coach Hoiberg loves to go small, and I anticipate him incorporating Denzel's skill set into their scheme and figuring out how to play and get some meaningful minutes there.
For full disclosure, Denzel Valentine is a client of WMG. I feel it's important. Point that out.
It is, but in saying that, I still believe that this kid is going to find a way.
Yeah.
I agree.
Look, I think he's an intelligent player. I think he is going to find a way. Who's your MVP? Who's your rookie of the year right now? Who do you think wins it with the kid in with Ben Simmons out presumably for the next 2 months?
Dunn was the best rookie.
But is he going to have the stats? Is he going to have the minutes to play?
I mean, I think he's going to get the minutes. I just think.
Okay.
Do I think long term he'll be the best? I don't know. I haven't seen him enough. But based on what I saw in this summer, the kid is ready to play right now. The kid he's mature. He has a physical body. He can defend right now. He can play. The physicality of the game is not going to bother him. And I think he can get out there and have the ability to play through his mistakes right now. And I thought he was great this summer. And I think he's going to get a lot of minutes. I don't see a way that you're going to be able to keep him off the floor based on what I saw this summer.
Okay. Let's move on to the who you see among the teams. Again, this is just forecasting looking forward. But we get to the All-Star break, which is really not the halfway point of the season. It's more like two-thirds. Who do you see? Who do you think is going to come out of the gate and have the lead?
Other than the Warriors?
I don't even know that we need to do we need to talk about the Western Conference? I mean, that's right. Is there any reason to think that anybody else would challenge them for the most wins this season in the Western Conference?
I've seen them play a couple times, the Warriors. I just see a matchup nightmare throughout their entire roster, you know. Yep. They just seem to look, you know, in sync already, and it's only one but two or three preseason games. They have a flow. I think they're familiar with each other. They are, you know, Kevin Durant is a basketball player. He's going to just, you know, basketball players know how to play with other basketball players. They're just playing fundamental basketball. So I give the coaching staff there a lot of credit for being able to implement and incorporate all of these new players that they have. So I think it's going to be very tough for the other teams in the Western Conference to overcome this team, you know, as the year goes on.
So who do you have in the East?
Right now, I would say the Cavs. And I'm going to say the Cavs from this standpoint. I think the Cavs, they're battle-tested. The Cavs, you know, a lot of teams right now are getting familiar with each other during training camp. They're learning their, you know, play calls, play sets. They're learning what their go-to plays could be in need situations. The Cavs right now are just getting conditioning and reps. They're ready for the challenge on opening night. So I think the Cavs are a little further ahead. Now, are there other teams, the Knicks, can they put it all together? You know, we've talked about the Bulls. Now we're talking about, you know.
Really?
Well, I mean, you put the Bulls
in that conversation?
I'm not putting them in the conversation. What I'm saying is they have players who've been through some battles. Dwayne Wade and Rondo have been through some battles. They've been there. So the experience is there. You have Boston. Is Atlanta? Is Dwight Howard going to have – is he going to reemerge as a top 10 player? So you have a lot of question marks. But I think right now I would say that Cleveland right now they're ahead of everyone else in that department.
Man, did you blow the 24-second clock there? We're at halftime.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is Shane, and I wanted to let you know here on BJ and Buka, the halftime break is all about music. And today we have Pharoah Monch featuring Danon Porter and their song, Haile Selassie Karate.
All seeing eye, ocular exam. The apocalypse backed by popular demand. Innocuous, but still leave a stage with blood in my hand for the populace. Put a fist in the sky. License to kill, italicized into my ID of Rocky Illuminati. Haile Selassie Karate, John the Beast Mugabe, King Jaffe in the lobby with the fur made of a lion. The eye of Horus, Mount Zion, vibrant, prominent constellations of Orion. The reason why my stars are in alignment. The renegade, analog walk ball, rock star, tossing homemade grenades, CDs, NYPD cop cars. Just to get the revolution to pop off, fraudulent stock, funded with Louis Vuitton knockoffs, hijacking helicopters to detonate your metropolis. While I'm in the cockpit, politicking like Stephanopoulos, and my esophagus is quite atomic when I vomit. Bioengineered ergonomics, the formula truth divided by innovative ebonics, times goose slime, crushed ice, and a splash of tonic. Nigga, my past lives are astronomic. Smoking hash in a cathedral with Nostradamus at mass. Discussing Martin Luther's for your last speech. Step on my British walkers, get your ass beat.
I said, I ain't gangster even though I grew up.
All right, we're in the third quarter, and this is obviously the same as an NBA game. Starting to tighten up a little bit, and we get to make adjustments. So this is where we test each other's trivia knowledge of the game. And by the way, I'll say just moving forward, I suck at this. I always suck at this.
Hey. That means you're not really watching the games when you're at the game, pal.
No. It means that I'm not keeping track of statistics and all of the kind of goofy stuff. I am watching the game and I'm more involved in the actual what's going on in front of me. But that said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to give this a test. We have 90 seconds for each answer. I don't know. You can, if you have it, you don't have it, you can kind of root around. You can give it your best guess. But let's start here. I'm going to ask you the first question. Then you get to ask me the next question.
Oh.
This is true or false.
Go. Oh.
Steph Curry holds the NBA regular season record for most points in a quarter. True or false?
Is that from last year or...
This is the NBA record, all-time record for points in a quarter.
Wow. The
true
most points?
Or false?
Steph Curry, that's false. That's false.
You don't know the answer, do you?
Well, I'm going to say, no, it's Clay. Clay had like... I don't know what
well
he did.
Done.
He
well
yeah,
done.
He, I was watching that game. I was watching that game in amazement. It's Clay. I'm going with Clay.
Third quarter, I believe. And it was, I wish I could give you the number exactly. I want to say it was like 37,
ding,
35,
ding,
37.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, exactly. All right.
Okay. All right.
Your turn.
Okay. True or false? Jason Kidd is one of the three record holders for the most threes in a game.
I am going to, it almost sounds funny that we talk about Jason Kidd and threes because this was a guy who once upon a time, his nickname was Ason Kidd because he had no J. And I have great admiration for him because like some other guys, he reinvented himself. And guys who are superstars and they find a way to reinvent themselves so they can continue to play. And Jason Kidd actually was a three-point threat, a reputable three-point threat when he finally won his championship with the Dallas Mavericks in 2011. But in this case, I am going to say false because I just don't remember that he ever hit that many threes. I think he took a lot of threes. I think he may be, whether it's Dallas or somebody, he's in the record books as having taken an awful lot of threes, but making them, I'm going to say false. And the actual answer is, it is false. Kobe Bryant, Steph Curry, and Daniel Marshall hold the record with 12. Our boy, Danielle. All right. Here's my question for you. On December 8th, 1992, against your Bulls team, BJ, Dominique Wilkins set an NBA record for the most free throws made in a game without a miss. How many free throws did he make? 25, 23, 22, or 24? And I like the way Shane went. He kind of mixed it up. He made it look like he was making it really bad. Why didn't you just say 22, 23, 24, or 25? No. We had to go and be creative.
So he definitely made 20, right?
He definitely made 21.
Okay, you know.
Yeah, it's not a trick question.
Yeah, he definitely made 20-something, right?
Yes. 22, 23, 24, 25. Take a pick. Stick. Yeah, just throw a dart. At
23 and a half.
No, come on.
20, I don't know. 23, 24, 23.
What are you picking?
23. I don't know.
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct. You could not have said that in a more uncertain way.
Okay, that was bad.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay. True or false? Mitch Richmond, as a member of the Warriors,
yes,
holds the record for the most shots taken in a game without making any.
That answer would be false. And I covered the Warriors at this time. So I knew that it was Tim Hardaway who went 0-for-17. And I remember talking to him about this. And you know Timmy, right? You know Tim Bug.
This is a great story. I know. I asked him after this game about this. Go ahead.
He was always the most confident guy. He had an ugly jumper, right? He had the knuckleball jumper. So the fact that this happened doesn't surprise me. But I've never seen Tim Hardaway's confidence shaken. His confidence was shaken after this game.
I don't know. Maybe to the media, but he had the greatest quote to me ever. Yeah. So I was like, Tim, you didn't have it that night, right? And you know how Tim talked, right? Tim said, I said, damn, you missed your first 17. He said, because I knew 18 was going in. And I thought, that was the greatest answer I've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Tim is, you got to clarify, he's Tim Hardaway Sr. now.
Yes, with Tim Hardaway Jr. in the league. No, he, phenomenal, phenomenal guy. And this was also the time where he was wearing the suits that were made out of primary colors.
Oh, Tim was the greatest.
The lime green suit will be forever etched in my memory.
Okay. I love Tim.
Last one. Over the course of his career, the mailman delivered more turnovers than anyone in the history of the league with 4,524. Who is second on the list to Malone?
Ooh, Malone
is number one. Kobe Bryant, John Stockton, or Isaiah Lord-Thomas? Who's second on the list to turnovers?
Well, it can't be Kobe because Kobe didn't handle the ball as much as the other guys. So I'm going to knock him off the list. You know what? I'm going to go here because I watched Steve Nash one year lead the league in turnovers. And mm-hmm. most time point guards do. And you said Isaiah Thomas?
Isaiah Thomas, John Stockton, or Kobe Bryant?
It can't be Isaiah because Isaiah shared the ball with Joe Dumars.
Yeah.
It can't be. So I'm just going to Stockton by pure number.
Process of elimination. Look at BJ Armstrong getting the job done. John Stockton is the correct answer. But how about that? Karl Malone and John Stockton. We think of the duo, the pick and roll duo.
I was really surprised with Karl Malone. I did not know that. I would have never guessed that.
Yeah.
I didn't think he handled the ball that much.
Yeah. My issue simply is, and it goes back, you talked about point guards. I had a hard time with Magic giving Russ Westbrook a hard time because he led the league in turnovers as a rookie and led the league that year, if I'm not mistaken. Magic did the same thing when he was a rookie. Yeah, like I mean, at rookie point guards, that's what happens.
That's what happens. You're seeing double teams, you're seeing defensive schemes, you're playing and passing. You got to learn passing angles and passing lanes. So, you know, as a player, that's just become to be expected. Now, if you're doing that 7-8 years in the league, that's another thing.
Right.
Your rookie year, of course, you're going to have a lot of turnovers. But you know what? That's part of the learning process. So, you know, you learn how to play through your mistakes.
You know what's really crazy? This is the first time we've done it. And we went 5-0. You and I, BJ, we had a hell of a third quarter. We're into the fourth quarter, and this is where you never know what's going to happen in the fourth quarter. It can go crazy, but this is an opportunity in this case with the presidential debate and with Donald Trump trying to excuse some comments that he made about women in a recorded conversation. It wasn't supposed to be a public conversation, but we know how this goes in this day and age, that nothing is private. Everything is on the record. And essentially said some things about women, about chasing married women, about the value of being a star and how that allows you to do whatever you want with women. And when he was called out on it and when that became public, he said, well, that's just locker room talk.
This has got Bucher, not Rick. This has got Bucher fired up. Oh, where's Bucher going with this one?
I don't know. Well, let me ask you, what do you think about the excuse that that's locker room talk?
Well, I don't know what locker room he's been in. I think he's probably owned some teams. He's probably been in the owner's box.
XFL, that didn't go well.
Yep. I don't know what locker room he's been in, but I will say this. It's just very disappointing that we're bringing other people into it. You know, you said it. Take responsibility for what you said.
Right.
You take the responsibility. Now it's locker room talk. So, you know, I've been in a locker room my entire life. I don't know anyone that's spoken like that in the locker room. What locker room is this guy in? Clarify.
Well, here's,
be specific.
Here's the thing. I've heard guys in, whether it's a locker room, whether it's guys at the bar, whether it's guys hanging out, fishing or whatever it might be. There's locker room talk is, even though we have women in sports and they have their locker room conversation, I'm really curious. That's what we need to find out is, do women talk in the locker room the same way men do? And we've heard guys talk about conquest. We've heard guys talk about chasing tail. So, and I know that pro athletes, college athletes, high school athletes, You sometimes talk about that. I mean, guys talk about that wherever it might be. You don't even have to be an athlete. So when you say you've never heard that or you've never been around that, can you be more specific? Because guys talk about it. Now, they might not be talking about chasing a married chick, or they might not be talking about, but then again, guys might, because guys have. So look, I find it, here's my thing. It's like, that's fine. We're not trying to elect Richie Incognito as president of the United States. There might be guys who can talk like who talk like that. There might be guys who talk about chasing married women, or as a star, I can get whoever I want, whenever I want. We're not thinking of electing them as the president of the country. That's the greatest distinction for me. But when I hear you, and you're not alone, Emmanuel Acho, there's been other athletes who've said, I don't know what locker room he's been in, but I've never heard anybody talk like that. But you've heard guys talk about women and about chasing women. So what's the difference?
Well, I think the difference is the environment in which you're in. I don't know, at least professional locker rooms that I've been a part of, okay, where guys are just sitting around talking openly like that.
Yeah.
Now,
guys tell stories, though.
Guys tell stories. Guys are doing things. But for the most part, when you're in a locker room setting, that's your transitioning to something else, right? You're in the locker room to get ready to go to the game. You're after practice. You're getting ready to go to wherever you got to go, home or an event. That's your transition. You're not just hanging out in the locker room, sitting around, taking a stop, spa, you know, taking a steam, telling stories. Like,
right.
Believe it or not, you know, most athletes have lives outside of their particular sport. They're moving. They're transitioning into something to move on. So now, do I think guys in the privacy and other settings, maybe you're joking around? Absolutely. I could see that.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me that this is just locker room talk. Like, oh yeah, this is what guys do. Like, at least in the locker rooms I partook in, there was like, you know, the coaches getting ready to play. We were actually doing something constructive. We weren't just hanging out in the locker room. Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, we were actually doing something in our locker room.
Yeah.
Now, again, can I see guys who you have, you know, your guys and your close friends sitting around, maybe you're hanging out, doing, waiting around for something? Yeah, I can see that. I can see that happening. Now, I don't know how that happens, but I can see it. But you can't tell me that this is locker room talk and dismiss it as, like, oh, yeah, these guys are so unsophisticated. This is all they do. They just hang around. No, I'm not going to generalize like that. I'm not going to let him put me into that box and then just say, oh, that's locker room talk and walk away from it.
Yeah. Well, here's the other part that I've known, just as when it comes to human nature, and this goes with anything, but it includes talking about conquest. It talks about women. The guys who talked about it the most usually were the guys who weren't getting any. That's just been my experience. Like, if you were getting busy, you didn't need to talk about it. In fact, you were
getting out of the locker room so you could go do what you had.
Yeah, exactly. And you didn't talk about it because you didn't want anybody messing up your game. Because here's the thing. Because you knew there would always be that one guy who was the cock blocker, right? And he would run it back. You talk about, I got with so-and-so. Next thing you know, she's coming back and going, were you talking about me to so-and-so? And you're like, what?
Like, hey. That's a great point, Rick. I mean, you know, like I said, the locker room for athletes, it's a transition. It's a transition place. You know, you're getting ready to do something. Where are you going? Oh, man, I'm just going home or whatever. And why are you dressed nice? Well, wow, who's that guy? You know, I love the veterans who were always in a suit, you know, back in my day. Like, this is just a road trip. Oh, yeah, we knew what that guy was doing. Never talked about anything in the locker room. So, again, it's pretty funny.
We may get to this subject once upon a time, somewhere down the line, where we talk about those guys who were the quiet ones, the quiet leaders who were able to get things done. Yeah, but we'll save that for another time.
Oh, that's funny.
You've been listening to the BJ and Bucher podcast on The Cycle. This is our new format with our new producer, Shane Freeman. I'm sure you can already detect that there's been a major upgrade in how we're doing it. As I said, this is a new approach to the show. We're trying to hit more topics, more things that are current and available to you. We're still going to have the free-flowing conversation and the humor and the insight and the behind-the-scenes look. We don't want to over format this, but we also want to be able to jam pack this thing so that every time you listen, you're going to feel as if you are fully informed on what's going on in the league, in and around the league, every week tuning in. So thank you once again for listening to the BJ and Bucher podcast. We'll be doing it again next week.